Welcome to the Watercolors Aquarium Gallery podcast, brought to you from the Aquarium Rush Studios in the beautiful downtown Grand Rapids, Michigan. It's kind of cold and rainy here today.
Although we've got an amazing sunset, so don't complain.
And a rainbow.
Yeah.
My name is Ben.
I'm Amy.
And I'm Charles.
Today we're talking about fun stuff.
Yeah, it's always nice to talk about fun stuff for a change.
I know, sometimes we get a little depressing or we get a little serious around here sometimes.
Or we're talking about work, which is testing and maintenance, and this is the stuff you want to think about.
I think it's time to dream a little dream.
Da, da, da.
Sorry,
that movie?
I just cried a single tear. No,
that was a classic Corey Feldman, Corey Haim movie from the 80s. I highly recommend it.
Nope, don't know that one.
So we're talking really not about acting and dreaming. We're talking about dream fish because, you know, that's what we do here.
Pretty much all the time.
Have you ever come into the store and you've seen us just in a group staring at a tank, not talking? It's probably because someone threw an idea out and we're all trying to picture it.
Yeah.
That
I like that.
Happens a lot.
I have walked into a store and went, that fish, that is a fish I've always dreamt of keeping. So that's it. It's a top five day. We're going to talk about our top five dream saltwater fish.
Mm-hmm.
I have kept personally two of them, and I've had in this store two others on my list.
I've kept personally none of mine. We have had in the store two of them.
Two. And you?
I have kept one. We've had two in the store.
Nice.
Cool.
This is going to be a fun one.
This is such a weird discussion. Like, I think saltwater even more than freshwater, because mine range from, like, I could probably pull that off someday to, okay, if I really want to dig down and set up a tank specifically for this one individual fish. And there's a little bit of in between too.
You're very quickly going to realize that, like, I have certain size fish that I like.
You did all of a sudden make me think, wow, there's another fish. You know, I'm going to do a sixth one.
Sure.
Just because it's kind of one of those.
Well, you made Charles scribble his sixth off, so.
Yeah, but he wanted like 50,000 million gallons or something like that. And, you know, mine is a different kind of.
Unattainable.
Unattainable. But not really unattainable, just a different kind of method of attainment.
Interesting.
That's intriguing, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
I'm going to allow it because I do have something crazy on my list.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. The rules here are just basically that you could keep it in a home aquarium and that's it.
Yep.
So and some leeway with what that aquarium would be.
We've seen some really big home aquariums. Mm-hmm. So, you know.
Yeah. Well, and I think the other qualifier we all kind of operated under was, would you set up a tank for this thing?
I would. Everything on my list. Yep.
Perfect.
Everything on my list, I would want to, but I don't know that I ever would. But that's what makes part of them partly dream fish.
That's what I was going to say. That's a dream fish. Yeah. Well, let's get into it.
Yeah.
And so we're not just going to talk about what the fish are, but we'll get into a little bit about what it really would take for that dream fish.
Mm-hmm. Do you want me to start?
We always start with you, Amy. I think it's a good place to start.
I'll start with what I think is probably maybe my most attainable. It's not an uncommon fish, but it's one that I really, really like, and that's the French angel.
Nice.
Yeah, I love big angels. I think that this is my favorite. It might just be the individuals that I've interacted with, but that's sort of the impression that a big angel fish leaves on you is you meet one, you love it, and you just love them.
I'm not going to say or not say that one of the big angels is on my list. So,
I assumed it would be. I didn't think it would be this.
I'm all in with your discussion of French angels.
And I love their transition. I think having that fish would be so rewarding. I like the juvenile phase fish. I think it's beautiful. And I love the adult phase fish. I think it's just as beautiful in a different way. So,
I think they make that transition gracefully.
Mm-hmm. And it would just be a really fun fish to get as a juvenile, grow up. I don't know that a big softy reef is something that's in my future, but that fish is one I would really want. If it was.
The dream tank for that fish would exactly be a softy, a big, probably 300 gallon, because you can pull off doing those as a pair.
Yeah.
And that, anytime you can get them to pair up, and it's incredible.
Even a big French angel pair in a 300 gallon tank, I think if that was all you had, it would still fill it out beautifully.
Yeah. you're talking about a fish that's going to get close to 15 inches.
Yeah. Yeah. They're huge. So
that's huge. Amazing.
Yeah. That's my first one. I love those
relatively
fish.
Relatively local. Mm-hmm. Easy to get. Very hardy.
Yeah.
Fed properly. Very hardy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're not a, I'm never going to see it fish. They're a, I just would really want one kind of fish. Yeah. I
definitely had those fish in and they were very cool.
I feel like setting up a tank for a pair of those would be very similar to the philosophy of setting up, like, let's say a moderate sized tank for a pair of discus.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But just, you know, saltwater and bigger.
Yeah. Right. Or even the way that people keep the larger, more aggressive cichlids.
Yeah.
Which are often just single or a pair in a, I don't know, 75 gallon tank.
The legendary aquarium breeder, Martin Moe, back in the 70s, the first saltwater fish he successfully spawned was a very close relative of the French angel, the gray angel, in the 70s.
Wow. That's amazing.
That is amazing.
Really cool. Yeah, we don't really think about those types of discoveries happening back then.
We also don't often think of the big angels as being sort of reef safe. We think it's not reef safe at all. And in lots of circumstances, they're not. But there are lots of corals that angels don't eat. In fact, I think we're going to need to do a podcast on reef safeness and what that really means and get into detail about just because a fish eats some coral doesn't mean it eats all coral.
Mm-hmm. Reef planning could almost be just the name of that, because it's all about thinking ahead and planning around the livestock you want to keep rather than seeing something in a store and just deciding in that moment that you want it.
What?
Well, that is a whole other huge discussion. All right. Anyway, Charles, would you like to share your first dream fish?
Okay. So for this one, I feel the need to give some context for it because this is a fish that does not currently exist. Brace yourself.
So Charles is cheating today.
Yes.
I want a Tyrannosaurus goby.
No. Not that crazy, but crazy. So when I talk about when I worked at the Institute, I say I worked in a lab that did leukemia research. I'm kind of using that as shorthand because it's like when I'm... People ask me what I do here and I say I run quarantine. Well, that's not the only thing I do. So I also secondarily worked with a transgenics lab, which is basically a lab that genetically modifies organisms for other labs to use in their experiments.
Interesting.
So working with that lab gave me a lot of ideas. A lot of ideas.
Okay.
Possibly too many.
I'm curious to see where Mr. Spock over here is going with this, but...
I would love to see someone genetically modify a Hawaiian cleaner wrasse to not be a obligatory slime coat eater.
Aha.
Okay, I'm going to burst your bubble. No, I'm not. I'm sorry, the Red Sea cleaner wrasse is not an obligatory cleaner. The Hawaiian cleaner wrasse is. Make it not an
Because I have a good idea of which gene sets you would need to mess with. So that's why I feel comfortable putting it on here. Cause I was like the genetics to do it is out there. It's just, it's not economically viable. So who's going to do it?
Cause theoretically possible.
Cause I'm going to throw this out here. Like if someone did that, each of those wrasses would be worth around $8,000. And I know there's stuff that's...
I don't know how to respond to this one.
You took that dream fish very literally.
You took it to a whole new level.
Yeah.
But that would be really cool.
But that's why I put it on there because I was like, I have an idea of what would be needed to do it and what it would cost. But I'm also like, but it doesn't exist.
Right.
So your dream fish really is a cleaner wrasse, but... ethically justifiable.
Yeah.
And you've gone this far on the science behind how to make it ethically justifiable, which, by the way, is an argument for why they are not ethically justifiable.
Right. Let's just say that to make it viable, you would have to spend almost $10,000.
I wonder if you hybridized it with the red sea cleaner wrasse and if that would do it.
I don't know.
Red sea cleaner wrasses are not obligatory cleaners because they can survive not only on the slime coat of fish, but also on the slime coat of coral.
I know. And they make that makes them so very fascinating to me.
So very not reef safe.
Yeah.
Cool.
So then the flip side of this, though, is that occasionally, and I know people are going to ask, so I'm going to address it. Aren't there occasionally captive bred cleaner wrasses? And the answer is yes, but I don't know how long they live. I have never had anyone tell me. I can't find anywhere because I'm. So that means that the answer is I don't know if it's genetic obligatory.
I believe it is not genetic. I believe it is digest. It's part of the digestive system.
Yeah.
And it has. My understanding of it is that the way a cleaner wrasse digests food properly is with the enzymes it gets off of the slime coat of other fish.
So that's my understanding, but that also changes whether, that doesn't address whether it's genetic or not.
Okay, but it's also a learned, cleaning is a learned behavior. It's not an inherited behavior. And so the juveniles at first aren't cleaners.
And
so if those juveniles never learn to clean, they may never, and I'm theorizing here, by the way, they may never replace the enzyme in their gut that may be there for them to survive the juvenile stage.
Yeah.
And they replace that enzyme with something they get from the slime coat of the fish they're cleaning.
And that's kind of my point. I don't know if it's genetic or not, mm-hmm. but if it is, you could modify. If it's not, you would just need to captive breed them.
Right. So we're pioneering an entire study first.
I know.
And then, yeah.
So pioneer the study. I'm not joking about that.
Yeah, no, that would be a really interesting road to go down.
The first step would be let's figure out where captive raised cleaner wrasses are coming from and see what we can do with it.
Yeah. And I'm just going to throw out here, I put Hawaiian cleaner wrasses just because they're my favorite colored ones.
They're very cool.
Fair enough. Fair enough. All right, Ben, what's your first one?
All right. First one is a fish I kept a long time ago as a juvenile. And that is a fish called the Chrysiris angel.
Mm.
Pomacanthus chrysiris.
Mm-hmm.
They are an Indian Ocean endemic. To me, they are the coolest looking of the Pomacanthus genus angelfish.
I need to look it up because I know the name.
Right.
And
as juveniles,
I need
they're
going to
look
it.
Like a cross between a Quran and an emperor. As adults, nothing like it.
Yeah, so those are pretty stunning.
They're pretty amazing. There was a guy, he was an angelfish expert around for a while, about 10 or 15 years ago. I have no idea if he's still keeping tanks or not. But he had set up a 450-gallon angelfish tank the way people do African cichlids. And so he had close to 15 or 16 different angels
wow.
in there, including a pair of Chrysiris angels.
That's
and it was amazing.
So cool.
Yep. Amazing fish. I had a juvenile. It was like all Pomacanthus angels. The juvenile is the cleaning stage. It's not an obligatory cleaner. They do just fine. They're very hardy on frozen food. Give them some sponge every once in a while. Angelfish diet. Kept him for, I don't remember how long I had him. The only reason I lost him was because we got in a rescue emperor angel juvenile, and I tried to keep them together.
And that the juvenile, wow.
Does not work. Juvenile Pomacanthus angels are more territorial than adults.
Oh, and an adult Chrysiris has a similar striping to, like it still has white stripes and looks
knowing
like.
Knowing what I know now, it was a terrible idea. Back then it seemed like an option.
Yeah. I bet
terrible
if it,
idea.
I mean, if it didn't look like to the juvenile emperor, another juvenile emperor, I wonder if they would have still tried it.
I think that if it would have been a subadult of either species, it probably would have gone just fine.
Wow. Well, that's a really cool fish. It's hard to argue against that. And the only reason I don't have that much to say about it is just because, you're right. I'm looking at this fish. absolutely.
Yeah.
And we did a whole podcast of saltwater angelfish explaining why we love these fish so much.
The personality is all there. Mm-hmm. They were so cool. I miss having those fish.
Yeah.
How big of a tank would you need?
You could do those a little smaller, slightly smaller than the French. You could do those in a 180. Hmm. They max out at about 12 or 14 inches. That's max. 9 or 10 is really going to be, they're not one of the giants of the Pomacanthus genus. So 180 would be fine. And you could even pull off a pair in there. There's going to be corals that are going to want to munch on. There's going to be corals that they don't care about. And again, with most of the Pomacanthus genus angels, most of them are not going to care about leather corals. They're not going to care about most gorgonians, and they're not going to care about mushroom corals.
And they're very cool.
So yeah.
Yeah.
That's it. Angel.
I do have another angel on my list.
You do?
Mm-hmm. This is a dwarf.
Yeah.
And I almost hate saying it because usually...
I know where you're going.
Listen, I don't care what a fish costs. I really don't. It means nothing to me with whether it's desirable or not. But if money didn't exist, if it was no object, the angel for my tank would probably be a peppermint. The dwarf. I love them. They're beautiful. Mm-hmm. They've got a lot of the striping that I normally associate with larger angels. They seem to have the personality there. They've got the size there. They're really cool.
In case you're wondering, Amy just brought up a $15,000 fish. Yeah. I know of 3 of them in captivity.
Yeah. And it feels the most like I said, I don't care what a fish costs.
That's the point of the discussion, yeah, though.
But so, like, no, you're, if not it didn't matter, that.
Yeah.
That would be my angel. I love them. They're beautiful. They're really cool.
So do you know who would take the keep one?
You would probably need to chill for that fish, right? Because they're deep water.
Yep.
They get about 4 inches, so I would put them in the same size range as the other dwarf angels, 75 or 125.
Is kept in a 55-gallon tank.
Yeah. There's no reason why you couldn't. I'd probably go a little bit bigger just because that's my my habit. Sorry. But
I'm just picturing $15,000 fish and a 55.
I know. Like, splurge for a bigger tank.
$1,000 fish in a 55-gallon tank. Dark.
Yeah.
That's their biggest drawback.
Dark. Yeah. Although they would fit really cool in that MPS reef we were talking about the other day. It would be the perfect centerpiece fish for that tank.
See, Amy and I have talked about people don't do deep water tanks enough. They are so cool.
Yeah. I have a deep water fish on my list too.
Okay, so, let's. You know, I got one. So let's.
No, we're not talking pepper and angels. She brought up pepper and angels. Sometime there's a collection video with 2 of the big names in collection diving for peppermint angels. And the reason that this is a $15,000 fish is because I think it's close to 300 or 400 feet.
I think it's pushing 500.
Minimum depth.
Oh, there you go.
To get these fish. So we're talking nitrous oxide. And no, helium.
Yeah.
They're using they're adding helium to their oxygen mix.
Wow.
To keep them alive at that depth. And you know what helium does to your voice, right? Yeah. They're stuck on a balloon. So there's live audio. They have the kind of masks that you can talk. And it's live audio of those guys catching peppermint angels and some kind of butterfly down at that depth. So we got to find that video somewhere.
With Mickey Mouse voices.
With Mickey Mouse voices, exactly. If anybody out there is listening and knows the link to that video, please send that to us.
That sounds hilarious.
Oh, it's awesome.
Well, and to factor in the cost, helium is very expensive. So that's part of the cost as well.
You're paying for an expedition.
Yeah.
To collect that fish.
Which is also pretty cool.
Right. Yep.
Sorry, I just keep picturing a guy being like, "It's getting away."
I think that might be a quote.
So good.
Yeah, I got to see that one.
Well, I'm going to say I'm shifting my list around because now that we're doing deep water, I put the Helfrichites firefish on my list.
I thought it was Hellfreak.
I don't know.
I think it's Hellfreak. And I think it's specifically... There's a story behind the name.
Interesting.
And we need to look it up. But I think it's Hellfreak.
All right. Hellfreak. But that would be my, like, and it's not even well thought out. It's just purple firefish is what got me into the hobby. the Helfrich is just the rarest firefish.
It's like a purple firefish with a cooler paint job.
Yeah. Yeah, that's all it is.
Let's take a firefish and put it into a chop shop and like soup yeah. it up a little bit. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they're pretty amazing looking.
And
for a small fish, there's a lot of detail. There's a lot of features on that fish that are just really unique.
I would love to set up like a 15-gallon like deep water tank just mm-hmm. for one of those.
Those don't even necessarily, they're not that deep. So you don't necessarily need a super deep water tank. You can put those in a normal reef tank and
yeah,
and
you
they,
can.
They can do just fine.
You're talking for the sake of the biotope though,
yeah,
right?
I'm talking sake of biotope. So they're not super deep water. Their price tag is normally around $150, $200, and that's because they're at around like 120 feet, which for a firefish is deep water. Mm-hmm. But I feel like those colors would do best if you had like, you know how like in cichlids we pump in a little bit more blue?
Right.
I feel like this fish would benefit from that. And that's why I'm like lean into the deep water a little bit. Not like a true dark tank, but like...
But like an evening lit reef tank.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, compared to... You're not really even thinking about it in the context of a reef. Your tanks are usually pretty white lit.
Yeah.
And shallower water. So, well, like you hear... blue and you're like, well, yeah, it's a reef tank. You're drawing out the blue, the colors and the corals.
Oh, yeah.
It's just a fun difference in how you guys keep your saltwater tanks.
Some of the accent striping, for lack of a better way to say it, not that they have any stripes, but they've got like, you know, a little extra line here or there. I wonder what the really blue light will have on those lights, like that line right on their forehead.
That's what I want to know.
Yeah. I wonder if that's going to glow under.
Because that's almost more of like
blue.
An orangey color, right? From yeah. my understanding of the fish. Yeah. So that's the coral. That's the color that fluoresces in coral.
Let's get one.
Okay.
Okay. So I got an angel and a deep water fish on my list. You want to go back to angels or just stick with deep water?
Were you done with the firefish? Did you say you had another thing
oh,
to
yeah.
say?
Oh yeah. Let's just talk about like care of them real quick. Yeah. Honestly, not different than other firefish. They're just more expensive.
That's really about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. A great fish for a slightly more peaceful reef tank. But yeah.
And I feel like yeah. they would be a great showpiece for like a 12-gallon reef.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you want to just, because for me, I love the idea of a nano reef with just one fish. And I feel like that's a fish yeah. that could hold its own by yeah. itself.
It's a good point to bring up because firefish are one of those that a lot of people try them in groups because they work for about 3 months. And then they start picking each other off and stressing each other out until there's only one, maybe a pair left if you're lucky, but usually just one. Don't do them in groups.
Yeah. Not to mention, they're probably pretty similar in personality to the other firefish in terms of their boldness and their... A lot of the other reef fish that we have that are similar shape and size, like a royal grama or an orchid dottyback, easily outcompete a shyer firefish.
Yeah, they're a little more timid.
Yeah, so yep. having them alone, they would probably be out all the time. They'd be a great pet. They'd be really sociable. They're cool fish.
I've kept purple firefish by themselves. They are very sociable and very outgoing to the point where that it got so used to it that when I left for college, one of my friends inherited it and she put it in her 200-gallon reef and it would defend its burrow from a tang.
It was like that kid who like got too many participation trophies.
Yeah. I was like, well, at least he's doing okay, I guess.
That's funny.
I would not recommend other people try that, but...
No.
Right. Okay, so deep water or angelfish? I got one of each. Should we stick with the deep water thing or?
I want to hear your deep water.
Deep mm-hmm. water. All right, candy basslets.
That's a good one.
That's the one fish on my list that I've not actually seen in. No, I did. There was a store in Chicago where I saw it, so I've never kept it either in the store or at home. The very similar to the swallow sea basslet mm-hmm. that we've had in stock here, they're just. Little prettier.
They're brighter coloration,
yeah,
for
just
sure.
A little brighter.
And that's a really cool fish. Yep. Similar sizing?
Very similar size, very similar care, very similar habitat. The swallow sea basslet versus the candy. I think one's Caribbean, one's Pacific, but they're same ecosystem, same niche. I mean, they're basically the same fish, just one's a little prettier.
I really loved the personality of the Sulossi bass that we had.
Yeah. It's like, doing great, by the way. I visited it.
Oh, really?
Thursday. Yep, looks awesome.
Good. I knew that those guys would love
it. He's got his little shadow. He hangs out and he just looks at you like, what's up?
Yeah, it feels like they're shy, but they're really not. They just kind of like those dark overhangs and they'll come out, they'll interact with other fish, they'll stand up for themselves just fine.
They make in a very large, very brightly lit reef tank that has a lot of caves. And it comes out to feed, goes in the cave. It doesn't hide. It's not, I shouldn't say cave, more like structure.
Yeah.
Big openings.
Yeah, just shadows. Yep.
Shadows.
Yeah. Yeah.
They make me think of like a stereotypical like trench coat detective in like a 50s noir where they're always like hanging out just outside of the light. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But they're like, I'll take you out. Just come over here.
Yeah.
They can be done in pairs, which, by the way, that's a big one for me. Anytime you can do a pair of fish, if you can make it work, it's so cool.
Mm-hmm.
And that one is one that they will actually spend time together as a pair. They live in the deep water environments where you don't run across a mate all that often. So when you do, you try and stick around.
Yeah.
Baby, we can make it work.
A lot of the other basslets that we keep, or daddybacks, basslets, grammas, those are in those kinds of groups. Particularly daddybacks, they're amazing fish, and you can get them to quote-unquote pair up-ish, where they'll spawn in a reef tank pretty readily, but the male only wants the female around for one thing. And when that's done, he's done. It's a one-night stand fish.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
There's no other way to describe it.
If you're lucky, they'll tolerate him around from time to time.
I feel like daddybacks are a little bit nicer, where I'm like, they sometimes progress to a friends with benefits situation.
It depends on the daddyback. Yeah. Sometimes it's, we're done, I'm going to chase you and kill you until you leave.
Yeah, yep. But monogamy is never on the table.
No.
Candy basslets are a little different than that.
Yeah.
They'll hang out as pairs. They're gorgeous. So that's on my list. Care on those things. They're not huge. 75-gallon tank. Maybe even smaller than that. I just don't do many reefs smaller than 75.
As a species tank, and just people don't do that, but as a species tank, most of our reef fish could probably do... I don't want to say most of our reef fish. Most of the fish that live this kind of lifestyle could probably do smaller than those big reefs, but a 75 is...
Probably a 40 breeder. Like, if you want to go with what size for a pair of... my goal is to keep those fit. Just 40 breeder.
Yeah.
Smallest fit. Yeah. 40 breeder.
Yeah, that's feasible.
That's how we talk about freshwater fish.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yep. Cool. That's a really cool fish. I love that choice.
And I'm just throwing this out here because it's mildly relevant. If anyone ever wants to come in and hear the story of Cuban basslets, I'll tell you that then, but that's not for this podcast.
Cool.
It's probably the most expensive fish on my list. So nothing like the Amy's $15,000 fish or Charles's $60 million worth of research fish. I know it's at $8,000, but I don't think that's true.
$8,000 plus marketing plus...
plus marketing.
It's a mere $2,500.
Oh, okay. Wow. Yeah. You were really conservative here.
I'd probably end up with a Sulossi basslet just because, you know, they're only $250 as opposed to $2,500. But
well, my next fish is relatively common and not that expensive.
I love it. Let's hear it.
I went with the banded pipefish.
Oh, those are so cool.
Yeah. It helps that this is the one and only fish that my husband has ever expressed interest in. But also, they're just really cool. And I think that they would make a great... part of my dream saltwater system is a big, messy sump. They'd make a great sump fish as long as the flow wasn't too high.
Yeah.
They seem to do actually pretty okay in displays that are carefully planned out as long as they're target fed.
A carefully planned out, fairly large display that has real natural live rock, not cultured, and is very well established. I've seen them work in reef tanks long term like that, fed heavily.
Yeah.
Not even target feeding the pipefish, but fed heavily.
Yeah. People just keep their tanks too clean. So so target feeding is necessary unless you've got the ecosystem to maintain them.
So let's take a step back. What? You mean cultured live rock is inferior?
That's definitely a topic that we need to get into these days.
I think that's a YouTube video. I'm going to write that down, actually. Yeah.
How clean is too clean?
How clean is too clean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But for this fish, too clean is pretty easy to accomplish. Yeah. And what we're getting at is that there's a lot of live food available in a mature reef. Mm-hmm. Little bugs that crawl around, copepods, amphipods, whatever is going to be cruising around on those rocks. Keeping that population up is, I wouldn't say necessary for keeping pipefish, but key.
Yeah.
For it to be reasonable.
It's amazing in our big system when we had to pull all the fish out of it when we did the move. And we kept them out of there for a while because we had a little issue, which happens to everyone. The amount of little critters that we found trucking around in our systems.
We had mycids breeding in that system. Like, it was crazy. Yeah.
And that could keep banded pipefish.
Oh, yeah. That would be perfect.
Very well. Right.
Yeah. So what a pipefish is essentially if you take a seahorse and stretch it out. They're just
grab
long,
tail,
skinny. Same sort.
It's a Laffy Taffy seahorse. Yeah.
They're a little more midwater dwelling than the seahorses, so they appeal to me a little bit more just because seahorses are anchored and pipefish are out and about and staring at you, and they're weird little horse face monster
things.
That makes
them a little hardier and a little easier to feed than seahorses.
And a little bit more appropriate for a slightly more mixed community tank. Mm-hmm. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love them. I think they are doable. I just don't have the tank for it yet.
Dedicating a tank to some dragonettes and some pipefish, that would be an amazing system.
A mixed seahorse, dragonette, pipefish, soft coral reef would be a great tank.
Let's do it.
As long as I don't have to feed it.
That's what we have the newbies for.
Uh-huh.
That's right.
They will love feeding that tank. 3 or 4 times a day, maybe more if they can get away with it, because it would be a lot of fun. Cool. Well, there we go.
Yep, that's a cool idea. I like it. That's a very attainable dream fish. We see those every once in a while. It might be worth exploring a little bit.
We've gotten them in a few times, and they're a fun fish.
Yep.
So for my next one, I picked a fish that I currently have.
Clownfish.
Yeah, because I did not keep a saltwater tank for 8 years.
Mm.
One of our criteria that Amy and I said is, would you set up a tank for it? And I was like, well, very clearly this fish
makes that list.
Hits that criteria because I did not have plans to set up a saltwater tank. It was just, we were like, hey, we have a new source and it happens to have these. And I was like, oh no, I need it. So what we're referring to is a blue stripe clownfish pair, the Amphiprion Chrysopteryx.
Mm-hmm.
And they're gorgeous.
They're awesome.
Oh my goodness. I'm going to have to take videos of them for you guys because
I really want to see them.
Yeah.
They get bluer as they get older.
Oh, that's cool.
And they are definitely way more blue than when I got them.
It's a fish that's really hard to believe in photographs because all things in a reef tank look blue. So are those stripes blue or are they white?
They are actually blue. And even if you're seeing them in person, you still have that instinctive that can't be right. And I am lucky that they have white tails because that's the only way that I'm like, tail looks white.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, so the blue is them.
Yeah. That's cool.
Wow. They're very cool fish.
Tell us about your setup.
It's just a, 30 gallon live rock fish only system. We talked about in the dream tanks one, I would love to eventually upgrade them to a larger tank with a carpet anemone. But right now they're very happy. Live rock, live sand. I just have a hang on the back filter with chemical filtration. I'm doing frequent water changes. But it's worth it. And they're a lot of fun. And they're pretty personable. I'm actually not used to clownfish being this shy, especially for that size. So it's kind of it's kind of nice because they're already the size where if they like wanted to take a chunk out of me.
As an Oscillaris or a Percula or pretty much every other common species of clown would do.
Yeah.
How big are they?
Larger than our largest Oscillaris right now.
Okay. And it's in the 4-inch range.
Yeah. So I'm like, I kind of, they all eventually get like maroon clown size. So I'm kind of hoping they retain the, like, I'll watch you, but I don't want to get any closer to you personality. Cause I'm like, they could be hellions if they figure out that I'm more scared of them than vice versa.
Although you don't have an anemone for them yet.
I know.
So they don't have much motivation to take you down.
They definitely do have their like spots though.
Yeah.
And it's really funny though, because they're like, they're definitely a pair now. But you can tell that they do have some marital strife because the female has her definite spot.
Yeah.
And when the male is in her good graces, he sleeps with her. When he's not, he's got his own burrow.
He sleeps on the couch.
He came in a little late and got a little drunk with my buddies after work. Don't worry about it for the couch.
All right. Fine. You can go out to the annex anemone.
But I've also, these fish have been a lot of fun for me too, though, because I have been kind of experimenting with making my own foods, because I think given the types of colors these fish get, I think the more variety I can give them, the more I can get those colors to come out.
I love that.
Cool. Yeah. I need to see pictures of them. I loved them when they were here and I want to know how they turned out.
Mm-hmm. It'll happen.
Eventually.
All right, I'm going back to angelfish.
Cool.
Multicolor angels.
Mm. I knew it. I knew it was going to happen.
We just talked about
them. We talked about it in our last podcast.
You can't actually ignore them now.
When I had them, I had a pair.
Mm.
And they paired up and they hung together.
They did the angelfish thing.
They did.
Oh.
Pairing them up was really easy. I ordered a medium and I ordered a small. And I put them together and they said, oh, hey, what's up?
Good enough.
Good enough.
You know, plenty of fish in the sea is definitely misconstruing the situation out there. Plenty of fish in the sea. Yeah, maybe if you go far enough. Take whatever's closest.
The pairing with these guys worked is when you've got two smalls or two mediums, they got to decide who the tough one is.
Mm-hmm.
When you have a small one and a medium, they want to hang out.
Yeah.
But who's tough? Oh, you're little? Yeah, you're big? Okay, we're good. You're tough.
Very
okay
clear.
I accept that.
But angelfish are, they have a determined sex, right?
No.
No, they will. No.
They are born female.
They're all born female.
All
okay.
Born female. Yep.
Yeah.
Males will kill each other. Females will work it out sometimes. Pairs will often, if you've got a known male and a known female, that often works. If you've got two females, probably they'll pair up and one will go, hey, I get to be the boy, you're the girl, we're good.
Cool.
Kind of like that Coral Beauty pair I sold like a month ago.
Yeah.
Because he was like, would I be able to pull off a pair? And I said, well, I know these pair work.
Yeah.
They grow up together, they're going to pair up.
Yeah.
Yep. Reef safeness with these guys, they're in the same complex as a lemon peel and a bicolor. Although I don't think that's going to stick. That's the complex they've been in for a while. I don't think that's going to stick. I think that just anecdotally, there's a little too much variation in this fish.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't see that sticking with the complex. I had them with SPS corals, not a problem at all. Mushroom corals were in there, not a problem at all. I did not try it with any LPS corals. I didn't try it with the zoanthids. Something that one of the things I'm hoping to do is start a little experimentation area down in the basement.
Please.
Yeah.
Where we can say, okay, what does reef safe mean?
Yeah, that's such a, we keep referencing it. Pointless term.
Yeah.
Pointless, yeah. Semi-aggressive, whatever, meaningless.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. It's a gray area.
Mm-hmm. LPS do generally seem to be the easiest corals to eat.
Yeah, but there are fish that don't touch LPS corals that'll devour zoanthids.
Right.
A lot of the, like an orange spot rabbit fish.
Yeah.
They will eat zoanthids. They probably will leave LPS corals alone.
Can I get back to my dumb joke that I didn't get to throw in my punchline yet?
Yeah, I love dumb jokes.
Yeah, I was like, gray area, it's a reef tank. There is no gray area if you're doing it right.
Yeah, that was a pretty good
that
one.
Yeah, works.
Worth going back for.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there we go. Multicolor angels.
And
I hope
beautiful.
To have them here soon.
So
you know,
pretty.
Honestly, like, I know I don't like the angels as much as you guys do. Good Lord, can I enunciate?
Just have another drink, you bet.
Yeah, yeah. But I do love the like profile that like the lemon peels, the multicolors. Like they just have a face that just they are so endearing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Great shape.
And they definitely like. They're trying to figure you out.
Yeah.
<That's true. laughs> And it just makes them fun.
It's true.
Yeah.
Yep. So there we go. Cool. Multicolor angels.
All right. My next one is not that uncommon. I think it's a fish that most people are aware of, but don't give that much attention. And it might be because of the name. It's basically named after the two most common freshwater fish. Does that clear it up for you?
Nope.
So this fish is either referred to as the marine betta.
Oh, yeah.
Or the comet.
Oh, yeah.
Which are, I mean, the comet goldfish and the betta are like the two most common freshwater fish.
That's an awesome choice. I love those fish.
Yeah, they're beautiful. They're such a weird looking fish. Mm-hmm. They're black with white polka dots with a big black eye spot right by their tail. And they are a moray eel mimic.
Yes.
So when they're in mimicking mode, they will put their head down, their tail up. It'll look like the moray's mouth is going up. Fish will try to swim underneath them. And that's when they ambush and strike. Mm-hmm. Not always the most active, entertaining member of a reef tank because they're nocturnal and they're a little bit shy, but really, really interesting fish.
They can be trained.
That's what I've heard.
So you can get them to come out and spend time during the day and act like a normal... They're a member of the grouper family.
Yeah.
True bass.
Which is...
Serenidae.
Part of... I mean, that family has so many cool fish in it.
It does. And they have been bred in captivity.
Yeah. This was... We were talking about, like, when I was making my list, and I was like, ooh. And that was a piece of information that I learned. I never knew that they were bred in captivity. Yeah.
They were being commercially produced for a while.
Yeah.
Hopefully the place that was doing it goes back to doing them again because they're incredible.
Yeah, they really are. They only get about 8 inches, which for a member of the grouper family is pretty doable.
Right.
We'll probably eat anything that can fit in their mouths, but...
Mostly they're an invertebrate predator, yeah. So shrimp are definitely not something you want to keep with them, but...
I'd probably treat them like inches. A blue throat trigger.
Yeah, I would go with that.
Not tiny fish,
right.
No shrimp, but... Doable.
Yeah, they're awesome. Yeah. That would be in my top 10 list, not necessarily my top 5 list.
I don't think we've ever had one here.
I have not. They haven't been available for a long time.
So that would be one I would like to see and one that I would strongly consider keeping if I were to set up a larger reef tank.
Yeah.
They're just cool.
Yeah, I just really like them.
I don't think that's a terrible idea at all.
I hate that idea.
So I did get a letter out to our the tank race place about yellow assessors.
Mm-hmm.
That was almost on my list. And they did reply with they are going to get them again. They are just not sure when. So I will do the same thing with the marine
betta. The marine betta.
The marine,
I hate that name.
The marine betta fish.
Yeah.
They don't look anything like a betta fish.
No, they don't.
Or a betta.
And just, it's like, they're pretty.
They look a little more like a comet.
They actually do, just not the pattern.
Not the fish. They look like an actual comet.
I was quiet on this one because I didn't really have anything to say. It's a great fish. There's no reason to not like them.
Yeah.
Like, they're just cool.
75-gallon minimum size. Reef safe as long as it doesn't fit in their mouth. Easy to feed.
Yeah, they're not picky.
Yeah, the hardest part from what I've heard, because this is a dream fish, I've never kept it, is just... getting them used to you. Like once they're not worried anymore, then they'll come out and eat whatever. But it's just that they're not that used to humans. Getting captive bred ones would be the shortcut past that.
Yeah. And I'm just throwing this out here that like I 100% believe that's true, that they need to get used to you. But that's been my experience with any grouper. So I'm not sure surprised.
Yeah. No, they'll hide for the first month.
That Polonite grouper we had is a perfect example.
Oh, yeah. We had him for 2 years. He hid the entire time. We moved him out to a different tank, and now he won't leave us alone.
Right.
He tries to fight us through the glass now.
He's a good pet fish.
He's great.
Yep. Love him.
Yep.
Cool.
Good call, Amy. I like it.
Yeah. What's next, Charles?
I'm going to say a blue-spotted jawfish. I think, at least on my list, I think this is the fish that's most deserving of a species tank.
I could... Go on.
Because I think this is the fish that would most benefit from being displayed by itself. In the context of what... Imagine setting up like a 40 breeder or like a 65. with a deep sand bed, a rubble zone, and like on the edges you just have some soft corals, and the entire center area is just his playground. That's how I envision displaying this type of fish. And given how charismatic they are here, and given how I've had them try to bite me, I think that's a fish that could handle being, like, a lot of people really want to just jam stuff in, but I think, like, with Amy's, like, oh, just a pair of French angels. This is, in my mind, just a smaller version of that, yeah. Where it's like, it's just one fish that can really pull off pulling your eye right to it.
Yeah, they definitely, and they will be active and have an interesting range of behaviors enough to maintain your interest.
Yeah, especially if you give them the room to like dig around and move, because like give them room to like maybe rearrange the tank a little bit. They're
definitely kind of like a goby.
Yeah.
Attitude.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it. That's everything.
Even more attitude than a goby. Right.
It's everything I love about gobies, but it's just sassy.
Mm-hmm. And stunning. I mean, the colors on that fish, they're gorgeous.
Beautiful fish.
I'm so happy every time we get one in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
I almost set up the 30 gallon for one of those, but then because I was like, I had already thrown out maybe the blue stripes. Okay, here's the full story.
All right.
The blue stripes became an option. We ordered them in. Then there was a possibility that a customer would want them. And I said, all right, well, I'm already in the process of setting up this 30. What would I do as an alternative if this person, because this was a person I was like, if they want the fish, they can have them. They deserve them. my alternative was going to be, I was going to turn this into a blue spotted jawfish tank. They ended up not going with the blue stripes, so I took them home.
Sometimes that's how it goes.
That's a good story.
Yeah.
There's lots of different situations though that you could put a my back off from the species tank is they really do get along fine with lots of different fish.
And that's true.
Lots of different scenarios.
That's just Charles's bias showing.
That's just my bias. I love species tanks. They're generally pretty peaceful, mm-hmm. to the point where it's like they have their own zone, and as long as everyone understands this is my burrow.
Right. Don't mess with it.
I would imagine it's very similar to like a hawkfish where it's like, this is his perch. Yeah. And as long as everyone understands that, he's fine.
Yeah. And you could probably keep a blue spot jawfish with maybe not much smaller fish, but you could keep them with much larger fish than they are. Yeah.
Oh, certainly.
Yeah.
Yeah. As long as the tank is well covered. And should I mention, you should make sure the tank has a good cover on it. I do want to bring up that you should make sure there's no way for the fish to jump out.
Yeah.
And oh, by the way, make sure you know there's no possible escape route for the fish. That I drive that point home deep enough. These guys, if there is a hole in the lid they can squeeze out of,
they will find it.
They will. Mm-hmm. And you will find your very expensive, very personable, very beautiful fish dried up on the floor. It's a sad day.
Half
inch easily.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The second most depressing day I've ever had here.
Just when you think it's covered enough, it probably still isn't. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. But those are amazing fish.
I love them.
Yep. And that's great. I'd probably recommend doing that anyway because as we have learned, everything jumps.
We had a lionfish jump. Yeah. What the heck?
They don't jump. Whatever.
I don't even understand the physics of him doing it.
I'm so mad about it.
The lionfish is okay, by the way. I was standing right next to him.
He was perfectly fine.
Right. Charles caught him, juggled him for a while, tossed him back. I think he's like,
perfectly fine. But like he was asking for food like an hour later, so I'm confident that he's fine.
Yeah,
he's fine.
Everything jumps. Everything. Anyway, we're all a little emotional about that today.
If somebody would have come up to me and said, sorry, I'm digressing here a little bit.
No, but it's completely ridiculous.
I want to set up a rimless tank. I want to make sure nothing's going to jump out. I'd say, geez, man, I don't know, a lionfish?
Right? It would be the one.
Yes.
Like those fins. How? Physically. Whatever.
Out of the tank.
They can. They all can. Clownfish all the time. Right. Yeah. Anyway.
Anyway. Okay.
Great fish, Charles.
Right. Yeah.
Okay, I'm going back with the clownfish thing. And this is another fish we just recently got in. I'm so glad to have them.
I'm so happy that you have it on your list.
Because you just scribbled it off of yours.
It was just outside of mine.
Oh, yeah. McCulloch-Eye clownfish.
They're so good.
They're so cool. Picture a cinnamon clownfish, only black. That's essentially what they look like.
Mm-hmm.
They get to about 5 or 6 inches. They're on the bigger side of clownfish. It's a rarely collected fish, and wild ones. I haven't seen wild McCulloch-Eye clownfish on a list for like 12 years. And one of the captive raised places got themselves a couple of pairs and have been producing these. So they're captive bred. They're super amazing.
Right now, they're really, really cute.
They're adorable.
As adults, these clowns are like the most bulldoggy, aggressive looking clowns, even though they're not really that much more than any other clownfish aggressive wise, but they just have like that very grumpy face.
Yeah.
They are, and here's the exciting part for me. This is a fish that I remember when, if you could find a pair, they were like $2,000.
Yeah. When they were, all you could get was wild caught.
Yeah.
Yep.
And even when they first started being captive bred, I remember being excited when the price dropped down to $850 a pair.
Like, ooh, that's attainable now.
Yeah, that's totally doable, honey.
Did you just call her honey?
No,
he's mimicking a conversation he had years ago.
No, so this is like in college. I remember having a conversation like this, and her exact response is, "We're poor college students. What do you think we can pull off?"
Well, we pay that for classes every semester.
Yeah, come on. Right.
So, $8,000 isn't bad.
So what are they? What would they retail for now?
$99.99.
Holy cow! That is so reasonable.
Right.
Wow.
And so, like, I don't know, just to see that in like a decade, that drop, and it's like people still don't know about them. Like, how?
That could very well be why it's on my list. Is that I watched them do the exact same thing. It's a fish I remember seeing as completely unattainable, and now it's kind of attainable, and now I really want one. When they're $8,000, it's like, okay, it's like the candy bass. I'll never have a candy bass.
Or the peppermint angel, right?
Right. Never. Like, that's fun to talk about.
And dream about and think about. And then sometimes they become...
The McCulloch-Eyes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just that's a great way to put it. Imagine if someone had figured out how to breed peppermint angels in captivity and had made them affordable to everyone.
And now all of a sudden they're the same price as a flame angel? Are you kidding?
Yeah.
Even if they're like $200.
Yeah.
Yeah. Heck yeah.
It's so cool. Yeah.
So that's McCulloch-Eyes. Mm-hmm. They are not going to harem. They're only going to pair. But a reasonable size, 75 gallons, 65 probably would be fine. I don't know, I'd go much smaller than 65 because they definitely are one of the larger clowns.
Yeah.
I can see a pair of perks in a 20 and that would be just fine.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to see McCulloch-Eyes in a 20.
Maybe
a 40 breeder.
I've heard of people breeding pairs in 40s, but let's just say that's very different than a display tank.
And that's breeding. You're going for breeding. You're doing everything right.
Yeah.
Doing everything right. Go ahead with a 40.
Doing the water changes you need to be doing, which is pretty much the, if you're going to have that small, you need to be doing that sort of maintenance on it.
But I think something in the 65 range is more feasible, especially for a display, just because it's
like a 60 cube or something like that. That would be great.
By the way, one of their natural anemones is a bubble tip.
That's actually the only one.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Wow. Right.
So there we go. That could be a dream display, a 65 reef full of bubble tipped anemones and a pair of McCulloch-Eye clownfish.
That's really cool. Yep.
I love it.
Beautiful. So I think we are on me now.
Yep.
Which this is my last one. I saved my, like, all right, I'm going all out. I'm setting up an entire big tank just for this fish. And it's ridiculous and I probably will never do it. Garden eels.
Oh.
Because I love them so much and I would love to have them. I don't think I ever will. But
it's such a specialty tank, but I totally get it.
You got to have a deep tank. It's got to have at least 10 inches of sand, but ideally more than that if you're really going to do it.
Yep.
Big group of them, live and frozen foods many times a day, serious, intense feeding, very involved setup.
More involved than seahorses.
Yeah, I would say so.
They're so cool.
And I guess if we were to just change out that NPS reef display we talked about with garden eels, maybe you could do it.
So maybe if you had the garden eel tank that would flow into the NPS tank,
mm-hmm.
or vice versa, as a big system,
mm-hmm.
that's doable.
We're designing a public aquarium.
You might be right about that.
Yeah, I think you would need at least 300 gallons to do it.
Probably a 300-gallon, 6-foot tank.
Yeah.
That's 36 inches deep.
Mm-hmm. But it would probably be worth it.
Yeah.
Because...
Yeah.
They are probably the cutest fish that you can do in an aquarium.
At the very right. least, every time someone walks into your living room, they'd be like, what the heck is that?
Yeah, because yeah. it does look like an alien landscape to have a full tank of garden eels.
Oh, yeah.
I've only seen it done well in public aquariums.
Me too.
I've seen people throw a garden eel in a mixed reef and it
doesn't last.
No, you've got to set up a tank specifically for them.
Yep.
So if time, money... effort, all of that was no object. Maybe I'm rich enough to have a giant tank that somebody else is maintaining mm-hmm. every day. then the garden eel tank would be my tank. I would love to have that. I think you could get
those
some other
amazing.
Fish in there too.
I think quite easily you could do a pretty cool ecosystem with those mm-hmm. guys. As long as they were the focus.
Yeah. They would have to be. There's no other way to do it.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
So it's ridiculous,
very
but
cool
I couldn't
fish.
Leave them off my list
it's
because
attainable.
It just
it's
it
difficult.
Is it is doable. It's just really, really hard. And it would be worth it if yeah. you did the work. It would be cool enough. Some things aren't. Like some things you could put as much work into it as you could manage and it wouldn't be worth the result. But I think garden eels would.
Yep, I agree. That's
yeah.
cool. I
That's
like
my
it.
Last one.
Charles.
So I mentioned that the blue spot jawfish was most deserving of a species tank.
This one doesn't deserve it?
This one is definitely less deserving, but it definitely needs it more. So I'm going to say the obliqued line dottyback.
Mm.
Scientific name, Sipho purpurensis.
Mm. You talked about those to us before.
Yeah. So it's a... Probably what I would the best way I would describe them is it's the prettiest of the jerk dotty bags.
Super red. Yep.
But oh man, they'll kill anything. And so I'm like, if you're gonna set up like a 15 gallon, and I've said this concept a lot, if you're gonna have just one fish, I think this fish is a viable option. But also that might be the only way to display them because
they would destroy everything.
They Yeah, they would.
They make domino damsels look like neon Tetris.
But that's what I like about them. It's everything that I like about dotty backs, but like angrier. And so that's really all I really have to say about
yeah.
them.
Yeah.
They're cool. They're kind of pricey, largely because they're rarely collected. They are...
Because they bite the divers.
Yeah, they are very rarely bred because they kill each other.
Yeah. This is like a note that I feel we need to make in context of that fish. Like, aggressive animals are generally the easiest to tame.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
they're not afraid of you. And that's usually the barrier between you and really developing a relationship with an animal.
Predators have to be intelligent.
Yeah. Predators have to be intelligent, and aggressive animals are not afraid of humans. Mm-hmm. So, like, those two factors work into what makes a really good... These are wild animals. A really good wild animal as a pet are things that are... I'm not telling you to go and buy an aggressive animal, but, like, they're just the things that are the easiest to convert to, oh, you're actually the food giver, not the territory stealer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a really good way to describe it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And fun fact, this is one of the few dotty backs where they are born male first.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Isn't that cool?
So more like clownfish.
Yeah.
And the big gnarly one's the female.
Yeah. But the males are the red ones. But the females are a little bit more like a purpley gray. And I almost like that color more. Because they still retain that like oblique lined, like, like geometric pattern. So without the red, it's more like noticeable.
One of the stores that was part of my evolution in becoming a hardcore marine aquarium keeper had a pair of those in, not the obliques, but of the same genus. I don't remember what species it was. The female was about 8 inches and red.
Oh my gosh.
And he had those in his live rock tank on purpose because he got tired of people picking through live rock.
They were biting people.
They were biting, yes. You couldn't, you had to be very, very careful when you picked through live rock. You know, you couldn't just sort it all and throw it out. You had to be very careful. So yeah, but they were amazing. They were beautiful. And when you walked up to the side of the live rock tank, they would stick their head out of the rock and go, "What? Come on, let's go right now. I'll take you on. I don't care. I'm going to take you on."
I'm pretty sure that's the same exact job description of a junkyard dog.
Yeah.
That's probably it.
And, yeah. And I'm just throwing this out here. Most of the time when a fish is aggressive towards me, my genuine reaction is, "What do you think you're going to do to me?"
That one says, "I'm going to bite you and it's going to hurt."
And my reaction is, "Yeah, I don't want to mess with you."
Eat me if you want, but you're going to regret it.
I will draw blood. It did draw blood on me.
Like most of the time with like the clownfish, it's annoying. Most of them with a dotty, like a large dotty back like that.
It's painful.
I'd be like, "Nah, I'm good."
You could just have that piece.
It's so funny because you hear us talking about it in that sense with so much affection.
Right. It's that personality.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
It's that hard to deny.
That fish has earned that right to be that mean.
Mm-hmm.
If there's a fish out there that can convince me that I don't want to mess with it, then I love it.
Yeah, because you're, I think, volume-wise, 100 times the size.
Yeah.
If not more. So, yeah, you got to admire the spunk.
Yep.
I'm picturing like one of those like really crappy like reality shows where it's like man versus car, like man versus tiger, and it's like man versus dotty back, and I'm like, the dotty back wins.
Every time.
No thanks.
Yeah.
Great choice. Yeah, that was one of your underrated fish too, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think they can be both.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Ben, I think you have two left.
I do, because I'm cheating.
Yeah.
Right.
But you own the store, so you can.
Okay. I'm going with my original one was first, and I'm going to throw in the last one is just a little at the end. So an epaulet shark, and actually a pair of epaulet sharks. All of these fish, I think. Yep. Pairs. Pair of epaulet sharks is on my, if my house was a little bigger, I don't want my house to be bigger, but if it was bigger, I would have a tank dedicated to a pair of puppy dog epaulet sharks because that's how they are. You can play with them. You can touch them. You can pet them.
I do definitely think that epaulets are the most rewarding of the sharks you can keep in a home aquarium.
That might be.
And I say that with all the affection for the bamboo sharks we have here, but they are not as outgoing as every epaulet shark I've ever met.
Right.
I don't think I've ever met an epaulet shark.
We had one here.
Oh, just for a very brief time.
Brief one,
yeah, because it was just for somebody.
Little juvenile,
a little tiny
10
guy.
Inches long.
Yeah. You're right.
It was cool. We both petted him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Yep. So, of the aquarium possible sharks, they are on the smaller side, and I would put them in a 180. I would do a pair in a 180, no problem. Maybe even a 5 foot 180. 5 foot by 2 foot, I would do that. I don't know that I go down to 4, 5, 6 would be better. 5 foot by 3 foot, that'd be an awesome shark tank. 18 inches deep, so you could reach it.
Mm-hmm.
They're definitely snakier than the bamboo shark, so I had to think about it. I'm like, no, I'm good with it.
Yeah, yeah.
Something shallow enough to snuggle.
Exactly. Yep. Well-chosen tank mates. It's not going to be a reef tank, although they're a little more likely to be possible as a reef tank.
Well, if you do the 3 foot tank, you could just do like a foot of reef at the back or something like that.
That would be so cool.
Be beautiful.
But yeah, epaulette sharks, I love them. I as you all know, we as a team love sharks. I make sure we have sharks around. Epaulette sharks, we have an amazing group of bamboo sharks. If I could like choose whatever sharks were going to go in there, it would be epaulettes. we came across these guys.
Yeah.
And they needed a home.
They needed homes. Yep. I'm glad to give them homes. There is a company around that is tank raising epaulette sharks on a regular basis. And so we can get them at a relatively reasonable price, and they are tank raised and they're amazing and they come in feeding really well.
I'm going to throw this out here. Yeah. You say relatively reasonable. I say for a tank bred shark that you can get readily yeah. available, that is more than reasonable.
Yeah. Are wild caught sharks readily available? I don't think I've ever seen one.
They're okay. So
ours are.
Yeah.
Ours are wild caught. I'm pretty sure they were captive bred.
No.
So the wild caught bamboo sharks are still pretty prevalent. Mm-hmm. It's pretty easy to get them from non-commercial breeders. But you have to find them.
Yeah. Yeah.
The epaulettes are actually easier to breed and easier to produce in quantity.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
That's why commercial breeders, you breed them.
Yeah.
Sharks are cool. Yeah. Awesome.
All right. I got to throw in my one last little specialty fish because they're just this amazing teeny little goby that needs a very specialty aquarium. The Catalina goby.
I knew it.
Love those little guys.
All right, that can be your cheat one because you've already talked about them.
I've talked about them as something that shouldn't be kept in home aquariums.
Yeah.
And the reason I'm putting them on the list today is...
Wasn't it one of your underrateds?
No. It was on your no list.
On my no list.
Ah.
Right. Because Catalina gobies come from Catalina Island, Southern California, where the water temperatures rarely get above 60 degrees. If you are willing to dedicate, and actually I brought them in for somebody who had a 14-gallon aquarium with a chiller on it.
Wow.
Kept at 55 degrees. And they're gorgeous. They're absolutely beautiful, stunning red and blue fish. Mm-hmm. If you're going to keep them correctly, they're fantastic.
Wow. I think a temperate tank is like a marine tank is not something people think about a lot. And I'm like, there's a lot of really cool stuff you can pick from if you do that.
Temperate or even cold water.
Yeah.
Like the corals and anemones in cold water even.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that would be so cool.
The tidal pools on the Pacific West Coast.
Yeah.
They're amazing places.
There's some beautiful organisms in there.
Yep. So, you know, I got to throw in a little caveat with the Catalina goby. And it's on my dream. It's probably for me what would be the most unattainable. Not because I couldn't get that fish and set it up and make it and keep it proper, but because I know there's nobody out there distributing them on an ethical basis. They are probably on two wholesale lists right now, and not a single one of those wholesalers are going to quantify them as a cold water fish.
Yeah,
they're going to sell them for reef tanks.
Or keep them as a cold water fish in their facilities even.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And they will survive for a while at 78 degrees. It cuts their lifespan from about 8 years down to about 8 months because it speeds their metabolism up so much.
And everyone goes, oh, it's a goby. That's normal. And I'm like, no,
that's
not for this one.
Good enough.
Yep. So on my list of fish, that's probably the one that I would love to keep, but the chances of us ever having one in here are slim to none.
Oh, it'd be so cool, though.
It would be really cool.
Ethically, yeah.
Charles, I know you had an alternate, too. You want to just share it real quick?
Share it.
It was absurd. I put down a bonnethead shark.
We did talk about it in the sharks episode.
Yep. The absurdity of it is the size of the tank.
Yep.
8,000 gallons.
Give or take.
At least.
Yeah. In a home aquarium, if you want to replace your home with an aquarium.
Right.
I don't need a living room.
Live on a little island floating in the middle of that.
Yeah.
Honey, feed the fish and open the garage door. I'm going to bed.
Yeah, no, I don't think Honey's there anymore.
No, that's a good point. Honey, hello. Yeah, that was a good point.
That would be very cool.
I'm just picturing the judge being like, so why are you leaving him? Well, it's either me or the shark. And he just looks at the pictures and he's like, fair.
All right. He's like, okay, no, get out. Go, run fast and far.
One divorce, sold.
Oh, boy.
All right. Well, there we have it. There's some little goofy antics for tonight, today, whenever you're listening. Tonight, it's nighttime for us here, but...
It's bedtime.
What are some dream fish out there? Tell us about them.
Mm-hmm.
Reasonable. You know, like, okay, here's the plan to keep this amazing fish. Or, mm-hmm. wow, if somebody ever tank braids these, like Macaulay clownfish, and gets them down mm-hmm. into that price, what are you hoping that you can get your hands on someday?
Yeah. We'll release the freshwater one here too, but yeah. I think this was a really fun discussion.
That's a good point. Good time.
Make sure to head over to Facebook. We'll definitely post a discussion post under this. Just what is your dream saltwater fish? But also send us an email at podcast@watercolorsaquariumgallery.com if you have any comments on what we have to say.
And always, thank you very much for listening. Let's have lots of fun and keep those hands wet.